Fast Eddie here.
And I'm Digital Dave.
And with us is Tim Chope of the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Eddie. Dave, how you doing?
We're doing better now. How about you?
Very good, very good.
You're flying a C-54 right now with the foundation, but you've also got a new airplane. What do you got?
We've had, actually, since all the way back in 1996, a very rare, one-of-a-kind Boeing C-97G, of which one was used in the Berlin airlift, which is the reason we have the airplane. We thought this would be a great way to not only expand our history about the great airlift took place in 1948 and 49, but it would be a great opportunity to try to save a Boeing C-97 for as long as we can, keep it in flying condition so the public can see what this great airplane sounded and looked like when it was flying.
How many C-97s were used during the Berlin airlift?
Only one. Only one C-97. It was actually sent over on May 2nd, and it belonged to the 1st Strategic Support Squadron. And a lot of people don't know what that is, but that's actually the air transport arm of the Strategic Air Command, Strategic Support Squadrons. It was sent over to see how it would respond to actual airlift conditions to be evaluated and tested.
So it was kind of an experiment.
It sort of was between the Air Force and General Tunner and the Combined Airlift Task Force. It arrived May 2nd, flew its first trip on May 4th, and it broke a record of 200 tons by itself for the whole week.
200 wow. tons in a week? How much can this airplane carry?
40,000 pounds, twice that of the C-54.
What exactly is a C-97?
C-97 is actually the transport version of the B-29. It has a B-29 wing. And when the first ones came out, clicked back in 1945, they were testing this airplane. When the first experimental models came out, it actually had the small tail like a B-29 and also the Wright 3350 engines like the B-29. However, shortly they changed that. They put a higher tail on it to accommodate the power of four Pratt & Whitney Wasp major engines, 3,500 horsepower engines. And that's what stayed with it ever since.
These engines, they were rather problematic, weren't they?
Yes, they had a tough going, but a lot of that had to do with the fact they ask a lot from the airplane, especially in the tanker version. The KC-97 was the first airplane built from the ground up for the purpose of air-to-air refueling. They ended up building 888 KC-97s, which served well through the Cold War period till the KC-135 came out. But they asked a lot from the airplane. They really did. Tremendously heavy takeoff weights where they had to have high power for long periods of time. If you operated our C-54 R-2000 engines, it would probably have a similar fate, you know, gathering a bad name if we flew at those power settings continuously the way they did the C-97s, or I should say the KC-97s. So yeah, it developed a bad reputation, but a lot was asked of it.
That was a turbo compound, turbo supercharger, whatever they call that?
Right. It not only did it have an internal supercharger, but on top of that, it had an external turbocharger. So there were two phases of supercharging here.
Did they have water injection on those by any chance?
Yes, on top of that, they had water injection.
So they were really serious about making a lot of power out of this engine.
It was about as far as you could go with piston engine technology up to that point.
Yeah, I'm assuming that was the largest engine available at the time?
It remains today the largest production engine ever used. Yeah, the R4360 still remains the largest production engine that was manufactured.
Well, now you were talking about over 800 of the KC-97s built. How many of the freight versions were built?
Not many at all. I don't have an exact number. I can probably guess that 60 or 70. Well, here's what happened. They may have built a lot more, but as time went on, they were actually bringing the cargo versions back and converting them to tankers.
I guess they figured they needed the tanker more than the cargo.
Exactly. This went through an evolution here. When you read the history of this, it's very exciting to see how they modified them for multi-purpose roles.
Now, somehow this airplane never was converted to a tanker then.
Ours was manufactured a tanker.
Now that you have this airplane, what do you intend to do with it?
You know, we have our museum exhibit inside the C-54 about the Berlin airlift. We'll do the same with the C-97, but it'll be about the Cold War era, because the airlift was the first confrontation with Russia that began the Cold War era. And of course, when the wall came down in 1989, that ended that.
So we like to think.
It's primary years for the C-97. So where the airlift history ends is where we want to pick up the Cold War era.
So now your intention is to take this airplane and fly this to whatever air shows that you can get her into, right?
Yeah, the exact same purpose as the C-54, only it's a C-97. But it's exciting what we did in Reading, PA this year. We, on the ground, of course, we demonstrated offloading five Jeeps. We got five Jeeps on the airplane.
That's a lot of Jeeps.
That was exciting.
So you flew the airplane into Reading. Were you planning on flying that as part of the air show demonstration?
Not flying on the ground. However, the bad news is we were flying from Hagerstown, Maryland to Reading for the World War II weekend event. We did the same thing last year with the C-97. But this year, 20 miles south of Reading, we had a catastrophic failure of the number 2 engine. We had to shut it down, and so it's temporarily grounded at Reading as we're searching for funding, trying to make a deal on a couple of engines, not only to get through this problem, but for the future, so we could get the airplane back flying.
How catastrophic was the failure of number 2?
It happened very quickly. I had stepped around behind the engineer, and I was watching the panel and made a remark to him that how smooth everything was operating, everything just perfect. Then when I got back in the seat, about 10 minutes later, he said, "We're swallowing a bunch of oil on number 2 engine, which means the oil's gone in, it's not coming out."
Right.
Oh, boy.
And normally that means something inside may have come apart and it's messing up the gyrotor scavenge pumps. There's 4 pumps in there to get the oil from these 4 rows back into the oil tank. Well, if one of those fails for any reason, the oil's going to go in and not come out.
Right, so it starts filling up.
It starts filling up, and then it pressurizes the crankcase, and then you see oil spewing out the breather. And within seconds of him telling me that, the loadmaster said, "We've got a stream of oil coming out the breather." And I knew what that meant. We got to shut it down. But
right.
Just as I verified it was number 2 engine, just as I was pushing the feather button, we got a couple loud pops from that engine and one loud bang, but it feathered okay. And probably that's when the engine was seized, but a 1,500-pound propeller doesn't stop right away. So what it evidently did, it just tore up what's inside the nose case.
Oh.
So after landing, and that prop system did its job, it feathered okay, so we made a routine 3-engine landing. But after landing, you could take one hand and literally spin the propeller like a turboprop.
Oh, right. Jeez. So it just sheared off everything inside.
Yeah, who knows what.
Is there a coupling designed to fail in that manner?
No.
Oh, great. Oops.
It's, of course, like a lot of those engines, it's a geared down prop.
Right.
The prop's turning a lot slower, but being a four-bladed propeller makes it look like it's spinning faster, but it really did a number.
Have you torn the engine down?
No, we probably won't. We just don't have the time, and someone else might have some interest to do that. But
yeah, okay, drop it off in my shop. We'll pull it
apart.
Yeah,
we'll pull it apart.
As long as we don't have to get it back together.
Sure.
So, Tim, you've got an aircraft on the ground. You need an engine. What's that going to entail?
If we're going to have any kind of a future with this airplane, we have to look beyond just one engine. We have to get an inventory so we can have, you know, some good years ahead of us. And that's what we're working on now. But we're probably looking at $400,000 or $500,000 to make this happen.
To get one engine or to build the inventory?
To get the inventory.
Wow.
Which would be several engines. But we're still working on this now.
Yeah, I bet.
Now, if we can get one engine, get the airplane airborne again, that's goal number one. But in the process, we have to look beyond that. You know, we need some more spares for the airplane. There aren't any.
So they're rare, and you've got to get them, like, now.
Yeah, that is correct.
How can people help get your airplane back in the air again?
Well, like so many other organizations, funding is the key. But, you know, it takes special people with the right stuff to support a C-97. But there's people out there that love it just as much as we do. We've come a long way with this program. I'm not about to see it fade away for one engine. We'll make it work somehow.
Well, how can the public help you?
Just get on our website. We have a PayPal program and help with some gracious finances. That's the big thing.
Okay, what's that website?
spiritoffreedom.org.
Okay.
It's a great website, a lot of information about the C-54 and the C-97 and what we've accomplished over the past 26 years.
Very, very good. Well, Tim, it's been great talking with you. Shortcut. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, wishing you all the luck in the world.
Yes, definitely. And this is EAA Radio.